Following high-level talks with Russia on ending the war in Ukraine, the U.S. says it wants a just and durable peace deal.
Just in a few months, President Trump has shifted the entire global conversation from not if the war is going to end, but just how it's going to end.
But Kyiv says no agreement can be made without its participation.
To make a deal without us or without Europe is not a good idea.
What else came out of the meeting and what comes next?
It's not clear to me that Russia is ready or willing to make any concessions. So I think that's been the most remarkable thing.
Today is Tuesday, February 18th, and this is The Issue from VOA. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
President Trump is in a position that he campaigned on to initiate a process that could bring about an end to this conflict. And from that could emerge some very positive things for the United States, for Europe, for Ukraine, for the world. But first, it begins by the end of this conflict.
U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, following a four-hour meeting with top Russian diplomats in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia Tuesday, he said President Donald Trump wants to see a just and lasting peace, but all sides will have to make concessions. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, speaking to reporters after the meeting, was asked if there was talk of possible concessions on territory.
Those are to be discussed, and those are things that we'll start and do the tough work ahead. But the important thing is that we've started that process. And what the president did not find acceptable was an endless war in Europe. That was literally turning into, has turned into a meat grinder of people on both sides.
But he and Rubio said there was agreement to hold more talks with Russia on ending the war in Ukraine, which was not included in this initial meeting. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at a news conference with Turkey's president said any meetings on how to end the war cannot be held without Ukraine having a seat at the negotiating table. And German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said on Tuesday there should be no division of security and involvement between the U.S. and Europe when it comes to ensuring security in post-war Ukraine.
Des Landes nicht getragen werden kann als Europäer, als transatlantische Partner, als USA und Kanada, als Freunde der Ukraine in aller Welt gemeinsam mit.
But with Europe also excluded from the talks with Russia in Riyadh on Tuesday, France planned to host a second meeting to discuss Ukraine and European security on Wednesday, but this time invited European countries who weren't present earlier this week, along with NATO ally Canada. And in another sign of a major shift in U.S. policy and relations with Moscow, Secretary Rubio said officials in the U.S.-Russia talks have agreed to restore embassy staffing.
We're going to appoint our teams, respectively, that have worked very quickly to reestablish the functionality of our respective missions in Washington and in Moscow. For us to be able to continue to move down this road, we need to have diplomatic facilities that are operating and functioning normally.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, also in Riyadh, said there's a high interest in lifting economic barriers between the two countries. The U.S. and other Western countries had imposed waves of sanctions on Moscow over the war, seeking to isolate Putin. Joining us now for insights into these major developments in U.S. foreign and domestic policy, we're joined by Andrea Kendall Taylor, Senior Fellow with the Center for New American Security, Transatlantic Security Program. So these first high-level talks in years with Russia and the U.S., what are your first takeaways from this? What did you see that came out of it that really stood out to you?
I think the thing that stood out the most to me was a seismic shift in U.S.-Russia relations. This is really a major about face from the United States. For the past 3 years, the U.S. approach has been to isolate Russia and to punish Russia and to raise the cost for its invasion of its neighbor. And the point of that has been to constrain Russia's ability to sustain the war in Ukraine and also its aggression that goes beyond Ukraine. But now with this summit in Riyadh, or with this meeting, the Trump administration is saying that they're looking to normalize relations with Russia. And to me, that comes with a lot of risk. First and foremost, that Russia will pocket any concessions the Trump administration is willing to make to strengthen its position for future aggression.
Well, you know, there was also obviously the very glaring thing that Ukraine was not included, along with European leaders. The U.S. says it's shuttle diplomacy, that they're not going to be excluded, but everyone has to make concessions.
I think it's really remarkable to hear the United States say that everybody has to make concessions, and then to see the actions and the rhetoric of Russia in the aftermath of this meeting. So first of all, it's important to recognize that Russia is continuing its full-out assault on Ukraine. I think that last night was one of the largest drone strikes that Russia has conducted against Ukraine. A couple of days ago, there was a drone strike against the Chernobyl nuclear reactor. So they are sustaining their hostility against Ukraine. And in the aftermath of the meeting today, you had Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov coming out saying that there will be no territorial concessions, that's his quote, from Russia on the Russian side. He's also saying that there can be no presence of troops from NATO countries in Ukraine. So it's not clear to me that Russia is ready or willing to make any concessions. So I think that's been the most remarkable thing. And meanwhile, by the way, the United States is making major concessions, talking about no NATO membership for Ukraine, no U.S. presence in Ukraine, no NATO backing for any peacekeeping mission. So the U.S., while Russia is maximizing its leverage and sustaining its position, is actually giving quite away a lot, nothing in return.
Right. It's been a well-known fact that Russia did not want Ukraine to be a NATO member. Up until a few months ago, it seemed like they were at least on the path to that.
I don't know if they're on the path to that. And I think there's still ample debate within the NATO alliance. Certainly the United States, even under the Biden administration, was uncertain that, you know, that was something that would happen anytime soon. Of course, you know, there was a lot of language about creating a well-lit bridge for Ukraine's eventual membership. So it was something that maybe was out there on the horizon. But it really is remarkable that the Trump administration right away would take that off the table. As you said, it is one of the demands that Putin has had. It's something that the Russians care about tremendously. So to take that away officially, even before any negotiations have started, and even before Russia has changed any of its behavior on its end, I think is really a remarkable development.
President Zelensky is saying he doesn't actually believe that Russia really wants a peace deal, that he sees something happening potentially indicating that Russia's not really ready to come to the negotiating table, but maybe sort of do some sort of ceasefire to reset, but not necessarily guarantee long-term security. Or basically, Zelensky just says, you know, he doesn't believe Putin is really being sincere in his really willingness to negotiate to stop this.
Yeah, I don't see any indication of that whatsoever. I mean, first of all, Russia is continuing to make some small gains on the battlefield, albeit at very significant costs. So I think Putin can always fall back on the proposition that he can advance his aims on the battlefield if it's not at the negotiating table. That gives him a lot of leverage, I think, and makes him feel like he's entering these negotiations from quite a strong position. But I just come back to this point that from Russia's perspective, there's been nothing to indicate that they have any interest in any sort of concessions or genuine negotiations. And I think when the Russians are talking about what they hope comes out of these agreements, they're talking about the same maximalist aims that they've always had. They want the capitulation of Ukraine. They don't want it to be able to defend itself from Russian aggression in the future. They want to see a new election with, in their view, a president that would be more compliant and flexible and open to Russia's interests. So those are all things that the Russians continue to say. And so there has been no indication whatsoever that they are ready to make any kind of concession or enter into these negotiations in a good faith way. I think that's just something that this the Trump administration is not fully recognizing, is that they're not negotiating with a good faith partner on the other side.
President Trump and his officials have been reiterating that he wants a just and durable peace, that that is what he wants. Do you think that President Trump wants to make a deal more than Russia does? And could it lead to peace, but that potentially is not just or durable, as you're sort of alluding to?
I mean, I think it's absolutely the case that President Trump wants to make a deal more than the Russians do. Again, because Putin believes he can accomplish his objectives on the battlefield, I don't think that he's all that interested in what's happening at the negotiating table. And the real concern is that President Trump wants peace, that he wants to bring an end to the war so badly that he's willing to make concessions to Russia that will only allow it the time, the space, and the resources to re-equip and rebuild and retry again in the future. You know, President Trump has said that there won't be any U.S. troop presence in Ukraine, that the United States isn't really willing to back to provide this backstop for a peacekeeping mission there. And so it's really hard for me to imagine any durable peace without a very robust U.S. Involvement. And so, so I think you're absolutely right, is that you might get an end to the fighting in the near term, but it's only creating conditions that allow Russia to rebuild more strongly to try again in the future.
Well, they have announced more formal talks to be held in Washington, also to reset relations, as you mentioned, you know, looking to restore diplomatic missions. What will Europe and Ukraine have to be at some point a part of these discussions and negotiations?
Well, I think the Trump administration is saying that Ukraine and Europe will be a part of the negotiations in the future, that right now, you know, they're meeting with different parties of the negotiation to build a common picture. But the concern for me is that the United States and Russia, through this bilateral channel, are already starting to come to some agreements like sanctions relief, like no Ukraine in NATO, that is undermining Ukraine's position in the future. So, yes, even though they're saying Ukraine will be involved in the negotiations, you know, down the line, what they're doing now is fundamentally weakening Ukraine's position in the future. The Trump administration also seems to be in discussions with their Russian counterparts about issues that directly impinge on European interests. The Financial Times just came out with a report saying the Trump administration is considering removing NATO troops from the Baltic countries as part of a larger deal with Ukraine. So again, even if we bring the Europeans in at some future point in the negotiations, we are talking about the United States and Russia, issues that directly affect the equities of these players, and the United States is weakening any position for those future talks.
And bigger picture here, what does this major shift in policy and resetting relations with Russia, how does all of this play out for the rest of Europe, the U.S., world order, all of that big stuff?
I think my biggest concern is like that broader, not my biggest concern, but one of my concerns is how this affects global stability. And the message now that we're sending to authoritarians all over the world is that if you wait long enough, you will be brought back in from the cold. And that is, you know, a message that China, given its imperialist ambitions over Taiwan is probably taking close note of. I've long argued that, you know, the most important thing the United States can do to impact global stability is to get Ukraine right, because it's a way that you can deter China, you can isolate Iran, which is another one of Russia's major backers, and you can take the wind out of the sails of the North Koreans, which now have, you know, 12,000 troops in addition to all the ammunition and missiles that they've given to Ukraine. So there is a coalescence of a lot of these revisionist actors, China, Iran, and North Korea, and getting Ukraine right and getting to that just and durable peace is the most important thing the Trump administration could do in order to encourage global stability.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That was Andrea Kendall Taylor, Senior Fellow with the Center for New American Security, Transatlantic Security Program. You've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America. On behalf of Scott Walterman and all of us here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For more news 24 hours a day, just check out our website, voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Lori London. We'll talk to you tomorrow.